Let's go up to our ring announcer.
The following podcast is scheduled for one episode and is our vantage point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast.
Outside, we couldn't see it from our vantage point.
Fans, and welcome back to our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast. It is great to be with you for episode number 51. It is a new season, season 6. It is a new month, Monday, October 2nd, 2017. But I am still Joe Murata, and next to me, as always, is still Mr. Michael Quinn. How you doing there, Michael?
Howdy doody.
Welcome to October, my friend.
Wow, it's October.
Ready to kick off season 6?
Yes, I am.
Almost been a year now of doing this show.
Yeah, one more episode, but not really.
But not really, exactly. Yeah. Well, folks, thank you so much for being with us, for hanging with us, for checking us out, for all your recommendations throughout the last year. We are happy to be kicking off season 6, and we hope to do it right for you guys. Before we get to any of that, I want to mention, as always, if you haven't yet, go follow us on the Twitter. That is at OVP Podcast. You have the GIFs and the tweets, and it'll be a lot of fun. We also have an email if you like that kind of thing. That is OVPPodcast@gmail.com. That is OVPPodcast@gmail.com. Quinn, we have a Facebook group.
Yes, you can go to our Facebook group, search it on Facebook, type Our Vantage Point Retro Wrestling Podcast. Click on the group rather than the page, hit join, yep. And whammo, you're in.
All the shenanigans.
Yeah, all the shenanigans.
All the fans, all the fun.
All the fun, yes.
The whole OVP family. And we want to make mention of a few places to find us. If you happen to be listening on SoundCloud, where we're hosted, you don't have to. Where else can they find us, Quinn?
Well, you can find us over at Apple Podcasts, where you can subscribe and leave a review.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also Google Play Music, Stitcher,
yep.
Otto.
Who cares?
And various other places.
That's right. There's various other places, including the Place to Be Nation. That is placetobenation.com, the only place in your pop culture world. You can find some great content there, and we're there, of course, so why not listen to us again? I mean, I would.
So nice, listen to it twice.
Exactly. You can also find some other good podcasts there, one of which is the Place to Be Podcast, the mothership, the gold standard, if you will. But another one on their pro wrestling only feed, Quinn, do you know which one I'm talking about?
The one with Little Petey, right?
It's the one with Little Petey. Petey Winston hosts a very lonely one-man show called Greetings from Allentown. Now, he's from Massachusetts, but
yes.
I guess the show is from Allentown.
Yeah,
is that what it is?
And one is the loneliest number.
Yes, one is the loneliest number. You're absolutely right. That you'll ever do. But check out our good friend GF Allentown. Greetings from Allentown. He does the old wrestling, but he does it by himself.
Yes.
He's great and a big fan of that show.
Fantastic show.
Quinn, real quick here before we get into the show, we do have a contest going on. We mentioned last week, episode number 50.
Yep.
In this contest, we are doing the OVP Recommend a Friend campaign. How do we do that, Quinn?
Well, you show the podcast to your friends. You have them leave a review on our Apple Podcast page.
Mm-hmm.
And have them say that you refer them. If you win, you get a t-shirt and yep. a spot on the show.
That's right. The person at the end of this season, that'll be episode number 60, will be announcing the winner.
Yes.
With the most referrals, gets not only the OVT, which mm-hmm. there might be a new one coming. There might be a new one in the works.
I've heard
some rumors. Not only that, you get a guest spot on a future podcast.
Wow.
Wow. So be sure to recommend a friend to the OVP podcast. Quinn, we have a new format.
Yes, we do.
And this time around, we are doing something that we never normally do, and that is have a serial narrative throughout the entire season. Each week, we are going to walk you through the foundations of how we got to where we're at now, the modern era, so to
yes,
speak.
Like a foundational series.
I guess we'll call it a foundational series.
For the modern era.
Beautiful, Quinn. And we're going to start right now with part one.
I'm ready. Let's do it.
All right. This is going to basically be about how Vince McMahon got to the point where he purchased the WWF from his father, Vincent McMahon Sr.
Yes.
Quinn, did you know this?
Mm-hmm.
Contrary to popular belief, wrestling before 1984 was not confined to smoky bars.
Took this sport, which used to be in smoky National Guard armories.
It was not.
There was a lot going on.
Yeah, I mean, they competed in arenas, maybe not as sold out and jam-packed,
no.
but it was a somewhat big thing.
It was.
Not mainstream.
No, not for most of its life. But here's one thing that most people kind of overlook in the history of wrestling, and this does matter to get to where we're going to be going. In the 50s, you ever hear of a guy named Gorgeous George?
Oh, I have.
You know why you have?
Because he was really popular yes. in mainstream.
That toast of the coast, that human orchid, Gorgeous George!
He was a very big deal. In fact, his popularity coincided with the popularity of this little thing called television.
Yes.
Engineering improvements give you a huge 17-inch rectangular screen in this wonderfully compact new Westinghouse set.
Television became very big in the 50s.
You ever hear of it, TV? Yeah, it's a pretty big thing.
Maybe one day we'll be on TV. That'd be nice, right?
They will just have the history of television OVP podcast.
That's right, yeah. The silver screen, they call that, right?
Yeah.
and when TV boomed, so did this little thing called professional wrestling. Now, of course, by the 50s, it was already the kayfabed, fixed, quote-unquote, people say fake, staged.
Right.
It was already that way before the 50s.
But it's cheap to produce.
Very.
And you can pump it out each week, and it's pretty easy.
And they're doing it anyway. Yeah. Why not stick a camera or two there?
Exactly. So it was something easy to get advertisers to sign on and fill time on the TV, the burgeoning television networks.
This is the Dumont Television Network.
Well said, Michael Quinn. Gorgeous George came and went. Wrestling as a fad came and went as the 50s drew to a close.
Yes.
In the 60s and 70s, the nucleus of wrestling was centered around this thing called the National Wrestling Alliance, Michael Quinn.
Yes, a collection of territories that all operated under one world champion that would travel between the territories. You know, JR always has his map. And, you know,
you had Donald one here in Portland.
In
and
Northeast,
Bob...
you had the World Wide Wrestling Federation.
Yeah, and Bob Geigel over here and Sam Muchnick.
Jim Crockett in the South.
Yes.
Probably 100 territories, geographic regions throughout the world.
I should briefly interject here. We're doing this history lesson, not for the 100% accuracy's sake, but with our own trademark brand of humor and fun for the casual wrestling fan and hardcore alike.
But there's going to be a narrative here.
Oh, there definitely is. So as Quinn was saying, the National Wrestling Alliance basically collected all of the territories and had a champion over them, Quinn.
Correct. So, and a commission and all this nonsense that they would talk about.
Men in suits, boards, very formal.
Yeah.
Conference rooms.
Right.
Oak furniture, that type of thing.
Yes. It was the wood age.
Yeah. Stern-looking men in black and white pictures,
with
damn
cigars.
It. Cigars. Can't forget the cigars. And basically what you had is all these local promoters, all these local territories, like Quinn mentioned. You had Stu Hart.
Yes.
He was in the NWA. You had people out in California, Roy Shire. You had people in Florida. Mm-hmm. You had the Crocketts in the Carolinas, right?
Yeah, you had Florida Championship Wrestling.
Absolutely. All sorts of promotions that you couldn't even fathom if you just got introduced to wrestling today, where it's like you have WWE, maybe GFW or TNA.
Yeah.
Maybe Japan if you care about it.
Maybe Lucha Underground.
Right, ROH. Back then, no. In the 60s, 70s, and 80s, what you had was your state basically had at least one wrestling territory.
Ladies and gentlemen, Worldwide Sports presents Big Time Wrestling with all the great stars from the world of professional wrestling.
Basically, yeah. And I mean, the only consistency between all of them was the World Heavyweight Champion.
Correct. The NWA's World Heavyweight Champion. Now, a guy named Vern Gagne had split off of them early on and formed the American Wrestling Association. And he had his own thing going in Minnesota. But there was a man named Vincent J. McMahon.
Yes.
And he was a wrestling promoter, Quinn. Did you know that?
Oh, was he?
Yes, in the New York area, they called it.
Yes, and that would be the most profitable area because it's the Northeast, it's New York, the biggest crowds. I mean, when you have Madison Square Garden as your main
home base,
you're obviously going to draw the most money.
And you're going to draw a lot of people that are going to be very passionate about your product.
Right.
Similar to the South, but a different type of fan base. A lot of immigrants, a lot of working class people of a different ilk.
And that's how that territory was
shaped.
Yeah, it was basically, it was always kind of your immigrant, working man world champion.
And that would, of course, start with Bruno Sammartino in 1963.
And Pedro Morales later
would follow. They were the faces of the company, both as a baby face, champion of the company, but also the guy that the fans paid to see.
Well, Vince, you know, I never wrestled with him before, and I watched him several times.
Why this is different than what was going on with other territories is there was a period of time where WWWF, Worldwide Wrestling Federation, that is, had withdrawn from the NWA in the early 60s, had their own world champion, Bruno Sammartino. Later on in the early 70s, They rejoined the NWA very quietly, very under the radar, but throughout the 1970s and into the early 80s, this supposed world champion, Bruno Sammartino, Pedro, whoever it might have been, was really not the NWA's world champion.
Right, he was only the Worldwide Wrestling Federation champion.
Correct. Now, this gets sticky here, because as the 70s start to come to a close, Bruno Sammartino's career has started to come to a close, right?
Yes.
Pedro Morales, no longer world champion. We have a guy named Bob Backlund.
Yeah, it's an all-American boy.
From Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
Not very relatable to New York, I would say.
Oh, it's complete opposite of what New York wanted, but that's what Vince Sr. wanted.
Correct.
He wanted, you know, this all-American boy. He figured, you know, this is something everyone will like.
The everyman.
Which is kind of funny because he had something in the everyman with the immigrant world champion kind of thing.
Absolutely did, a very relatable one. However, as the 70s draw to a close, one key figure within the Worldwide Wrestling Federation has slowly been gaining influence behind the scenes. And who might that be, Quinn?
Vince McMahon Jr.
That's right. Vincent Kennedy McMahon, the son of Vince McMahon Sr.
Yeah, no shit.
Had been influencing his dad in a variety of ways that maybe weren't so noticeable to the naked eye.
And a little background on Vince. He wasn't so close to his father.
No, no.
It was more an employer-employee relationship. You know, I believe he was the son of a mistress or something of Vince Sr., right?
Yes. Now, what had happened is he did not know his dad until the late 60s.
Yeah. He lived in trailer parks.
In North Carolina.
This is a guy that, you know, Vince likes to say he's a self-made man. He's not actually lying about that.
No, he's not. He did not inherit all his dad's money. His dad didn't have a lot of money anyway.
Right, but he also didn't inherit the company. He would come to have to actually purchase it actual stakes where he could lose it. Like,
yes, that's absolutely right. And this is the part of the program here where it is fair to give Vince McMahon Jr. some due.
Yes.
Because he did pay his dues.
Yes.
He, as Quinn mentioned, he purchased this company. He didn't inherit it.
Right.
He started Quinn and was most recognizable throughout all of the 70s as the announcer for Championship Wrestling.
Hello, everyone. My name is Vince McMahon. In addition to that match, we're going to be taking a look at a newcomer from the Isle of Samoa. His name is Peter Maiva.
Yeah, and during this time, he was getting closer to his father, who had an estranged relationship. And I believe by the time he passed away, they were tight.
Yeah.
They were close. But, you know, this was Vince, you know, getting acclimated with his father again in his first real job, you know, as a young man.
And getting acclimated with the wrestling business.
Right.
One of the things he did was increase their syndication in the 70s. Big, big things, honestly, that really raised their profile.
Oh, yeah, and increased their money, basically. You know, they were taking in more money. They're getting bigger.
Exactly. Now, bear in mind, what they are at this point is an NWA territory.
Right.
Whether they liked to admit it loudly on screen or not, which they didn't.
Yes.
They were an NWA territory, and you would occasionally see some NWA guys creep over.
Like Dusty Rhodes.
Your Dusty Rhodes. I think Flair made appearances.
Oh, Ric Flair, definitely, yeah.
Of course.
So there we have it from the number one contender, Playboy Buddy Rose. No doubt looking forward to his opportunity to face the world champion, Ric Flair, as wrestling returns to Seattle this Wednesday night.
But they weren't too loud about it, and I have a feeling that they knew sooner or later something was going to break at some point.
Yeah, I mean, they were willing to work with anyone back then also as an NWA territory. I mean, they famously had Tiger Mask come over.
They did.
And work with Dynamite Kid, who was, you know, somebody, you know, Stu's guy, but, you know, like, they're in WWF.
Absolutely.
Right.
But as the 70s draw to a close and the 80s dawn, Quinn, Vince McMahon Jr. has formed now Titan Sports. And this was in 1980.
Yes. And also, he to get the capital here.
Yes.
To form this company.
Thank you.
He started to, he bought an arena in Maryland or something.
Massachusetts,
somewhere like that. And he basically promoted minor league hockey. Yeah.
Exactly.
This was just a way to raise money and establish himself as a businessman like any other regular human, like,
exactly,
who has a career. He was just a small-time guy. I'm sure in the back of his mind, he wanted to buy his father's company when the time came.
Mm-hmm.
And here he was, you know, raising capital, trying to do that.
Absolutely. Ironically, he would then go on to purchase Capital Wrestling Corporation.
Yes.
From his dad in 1982.
Right.
There's the NWA going on. Mm-hmm. His dad was a promoter. The everyman of Bruno and Pedro and Backlund are on their way out, right?
Yes.
We are a new decade here. So what's going on in 82 is this. The NWA is still on top of the wrestling world as far as the, I don't want to say monopoly, but kind of
a
monopoly.
Basically.
On the championship.
The NWA champion was the champion. There was no disputed thing.
right.
There was the AWA world champion, but
who
no one gave a shit outside of Minnesota.
Yeah, honestly, no one cared, really.
Yeah,
if you
were the NWA champion, you were the champion.
Exactly.
So from a perception point of view with the fans, mm-hmm. there's a lot of work to be done here.
Right. And if you were a fan in the Northeast, sure, you turned on your WWF, as they were now known, as of 79, and that's your wrestling. But outside of where they were, you didn't know what that was.
Yeah, you didn't know anything about Bruno Sammartino or Pedro. Or maybe you barely knew about Superstar Billy Graham. You might have seen him in an Aftermag.
Right.
Don't call them the Aftermags.
Don't do that.
But other than that,
absolutely right. Now, the thing is, though, you did know if you were in an NWA state,
because
there were tons of territories, you knew who their world champion was,
and
you would come see him when he came to town.
Right.
You would pay to come see him, and he was usually a heel by the 80s.
Right.
70s, you had your Jack Briscoes, your Dory Funk Juniors, your Terry Funk, which a lot of people forget.
Yes.
He was like the fresh-faced champion of wrestling.
Yep.
I want to say that I hope that I can represent professional wrestling as its world champion in a right and respectful way.
Younger Funk.
But by the time you, by the time you would have your Harley Race, and your Ric Flair.
So Ric Flair, let's speak about him for a second, because Ric Flair was primed to be the young face of the NWA and to carry it through the 80s.
And he did a damn good job at what he did.
Yes.
I beat every bit of competition from Tommy Rich to the Funks to the Briscoes to Bob Backlund. And speaking of Bob Backlund, and speaking of New York, can you imagine there was some question around the country as to whether or not Ric Flair, the world champion, would have any trouble with competition from New York?
However, things were changing around him.
Yes.
The forces were working. And it starts with Vince purchasing the company, and you want to get into that a little bit, the actual action of purchasing the company.
So he purchases it from his dad, who was kind of on his way out anyway from a health point of view and on his way out of the business. He did go on to pass a couple of years later in 1984.
Yes.
One of the things Vince did, and it's somewhat noticeable, and Quinn and I picked this up watching some of the old syndication shows from 1982, is he tried to install, and very quickly, some stars. Like, he brings in Jimmy Snuka, he brings in Bob Orton back.
Yes.
He brings in Roddy Piper in 83.
Greg Valentine.
He brings in Paul Orndorff later in 83.
Jesse the Body.
Jesse the Body Ventura became prominent. He did a lot of things to try to reverse the status quo of the, your Don Leo Jonathans or whoever the hell was still kicking around in the 70s.
I mean, the territory was known to be for veterans at that point.
In
if you really
ways,
look
yeah.
at it, I mean, Superstar Billy Graham was a weird anomaly in the late 70s, but that's what Vince Jr. was aiming. He wanted a guy like that.
Exactly.
So all of a sudden you start to see guys that rather than being 40-year-old veterans who are on their way out and they only want to be on the top, you start to see guys in their late 20s, early 30s who are in their primes.
Absolutely.
There's a couple of things here that Vince did, not only beyond just the wrestlers.
Go ahead.
He added higher production quality.
He sure did.
The lighting got better. It started to look less like dimly lit Allentown.
Correct.
And
little by little, caught on to some things.
And he was building. You could tell he was building towards getting to arenas.
Sure.
Like, that was the idea.
Sure.
Another thing, he actually had stakes. He had motivation to get this company to where it is.
What is that?
When he bought the company out, he had shareholders.
There were six other shareholders, or five, and honestly, folks, we didn't research this, so I apologize.
But I mean, like, people like Gorilla Monsoon and Arnold Skolin, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
The point is I believe Vince had roughly a year or two or something to pay back what he owed to them before, obviously.
And if this whole thing didn't work,
they
were going to take control back of the company.
Right.
So he had a motivation here.
And not only that, those people were guaranteed lifetime employment, which I always like to mention.
They were.
That's why you see a Gorilla Monsoon hanging around.
Arnold Skolin.
Yeah.
It never went away.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't remember the rest. And one other thing that Vince did is he really brought Andre the Giant to the WWF as a fixture versus the shopping him out that his dad had done.
He took advantage of the fact that they had kind of a... They had control over Andre's bookings. And he said, we're not booking him out anymore. Why are we not using this man? Mm-hmm. Like, he's the most popular draw wherever he goes. He should be a mainstay in our company.
Absolutely. So between the television program that they had the two syndicated shows. Yeah. And they had had those for a very long time. But between those becoming more exciting week to week and being very serial, the televised Madison Square Garden shows that they had been doing since the 70s, Vince McMahon Jr. was onto something good. All he needed, Quinn, was a face of the company. And you know what? Bob Backlund simply wasn't cutting it anymore. But wouldn't it be very ironic, Quinn, if the guy that Vince would have to go on to become the face of his company, the face of wrestling in the 80s, would be someone that his dad had let slip by. Back after this.
Whoa, 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 whoa! Yes, sir, Daddy, this is the Incredible Hulk Hogan, and if you're looking for the greatest in wrestling action, the superstars of wrestling, this is the WWF, the Worldwide Wrestling Federation, the number one federation in all the world. If you want to see me hanging and banging every week, if you want to see Hulkamania running wild, well, tune in right here each and every week, because what you gonna do when the Hulkster runs wild on you?
Catch exciting wrestling action Saturday at 10 p.m. and Sunday at 10 a.m. on Super 66.
Wait, what?
From Harley Race to Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair to The Rock, Sting to Steve Austin, you're listening to Our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast.
And welcome back, wrestling fans, to Our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast. Thank you so much for being with us for episode number 51, season 6 underway on this Monday, October 2nd, 2017. Michael Quinn, do you know what it is time for?
Rushmore Death Valley?
It is. You got it right. This is where we still do this. We put four of the best of something onto Mount Rushmore.
Mm-hmm.
Where do the four worst go, Quinn?
To the desert of Death Valley.
That's correct.
Yes.
And what we're going to be talking about this week, Quinn, is actually kind of a fan request.
Yeah, a little bit. We modified it a little bit, but
we did.
We're having fun, Maggle.
We're having fun, Maggle. And by the way, folks, please send your request for Mount Rushmore and Death Valley and anything you'd like us to review. You can do that by going to our Facebook group. You can email us, but we would mainly recommend going to our website, Quinn, and the suggestion box.
Yeah, go to ovppodcast.com, click suggestions at the top, and you can just put them right in there, name, serial number, whatever it is. Yeah, you can just put all the information in there. Yep. It's all nicely labeled.
Very nicely.
And add the suggestion.
We will do everything we can to get to it this season. So, Quinn, we are talking about a suggestion from our friend, Bill Yankowie.
Yes, Mr. Wrestling Man himself.
Mr. Wrestling Man himself. And he had an idea. We are going to do the Mount Rushmore and Death Valley of... commentary teams.
Yes.
Now, his suggestion was Jim Ross commentary partners.
Yes.
Very nice suggestion. However, Quinn had an idea. Why don't we make it about teams in general?
Yeah, because JR, while he had a lot of partners, it might be a little funky if we just did him. Let's cover all commentary teams because there are some stinkers and there's some greats.
You're absolutely right. Now, we have done way back in the day commentators in general.
Right.
This is not the same thing. This is
not
teams.
Singular commentators. This is a team. So you could be have the best commentator in the world and they have the worst
be
person.
Part of the worst team, right? Yeah. Which has happened. So Quinn, since I guess I had the guy introduce the segment, you have this. What do you got?
Well, I'm going to start with Gorilla and Jesse.
This is Gorilla Monsoon. Welcome, everybody.
And Jesse the Body Ventura.
Gorilla Monsoon and Jesse Ventura.
Yes.
It's, how do you argue that?
I don't know how you argue it, but I do think that they are one of the best of all time.
Ever, yes.
I wouldn't say, it's hard with them because I can't say they're the best of all time, but they're one of the best of all time.
I think they are the best.
Do you?
I actually do.
You like that, Gorilla?
Now, you know my love for Gorilla Monsoon, right? And I know you love him too. And you know my undying love for Bobby Heenan. We did a whole tribute show to him recently. I love Bobby Heenan. I love them as a commentary team.
Right.
I still don't think they are as good as Gorilla and Jesse.
Really?
I really, really don't.
I think they're on the same level to me.
They're on a slightly different... They have a different focus. And you put this very nicely, Quinn, in the Bobby Heenan tribute show.
I did.
That Jesse came from the perspective of an ex-wrestler.
Right.
Heel, right?
Along with Gorilla, who was also an ex-wrestler.
Face.
Yeah.
And Bobby was more of an annoyance, a pain in the ass, a nudge.
And a manager.
A manager, a con man.
Yeah.
That Gorilla had to, like, deal with.
Right.
Yeah. Would you like to come? How about my trip that you messed up? Wait till I get my hands on you. You're in deep trouble.
If you're going to threaten me, you can't come on board.
So they were more of like a Abbott and Costello.
Right.
Whereas Gorilla and Jesse, they were like kind of hard-hitting analysis. More like, this matters, damn it.
And they know what they're talking about.
Correct.
As looking, you can see the confidence on the face of The Rock, Jesse.
Well, the tide's turned in his favor. The Rock needs to go for that patented pile driver of his.
Oh, a little begging by the million-dollar man. He got Morocco to turn away for a second. That's all he needed. Side headlock, but DiBiase won't stay in this long. Look now, shoulder block. Ran him over just like a tank.
They give everything, and I'm talking everything. WrestleMania 4, which is a snore fest if it wasn't for them. With them, it's still hard. But imagine that without them?
Yeah, I mean, even during the boring parts, they start remarking on, like, Demolition's outfits. And
you love bringing that up.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's like an amazing, like, random comment.
Not sure those outfits are legal either, Jess.
Oh, they've been wrestling with them for months, Gorilla. Yeah, Come on.
I didn't say they haven't been wrestling with them. I just said I don't believe they're legal.
But, like, those little things, like, Gorilla would get challenged so much by Jesse Ventura.
Yes, and sometimes Gorilla would challenge Jesse back.
It was awesome!
Yeah, it was great, and they both had their points, and you also felt like nobody was pushing the other around.
Right, they both kind of stood toe-to-toe,
yeah.
No advantage, really.
It was almost the irresistible force meeting the immovable object of commentary.
Absolutely right. Yeah. You know, I happened to be watching Survivor Series 89 last night, Quinn.
Uh-huh.
Before going to sleep, my wife was doing something. I was alone. And I just love the commentary.
Yeah, it's
Gorilla
fantastic.
And Jesse,
yeah.
They're just awesome.
I think Zeus is out of there!
Has been disqualified!
All I gotta say, Hogan should thank that referee for saving him, Gorilla. He won't be able to get away with this December 27th inside the steel cage.
Quinn and I were just watching WrestleMania, the Hogan-Andre match.
Right, because it's part of the Bobby Heenan collection or
Correct.
Something on the network.
And you turned to me and you said, they're so good on commentary.
Yeah.
Gorilla and Jesse.
They are.
They're
fantastic. They had a knack for making any moment seem like it was bigger than it was.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have to do more than that to the former ladies champion.
I'm afraid so.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Now we'll find out if old Sapphire can take it.
And even when they were in the big moments, they still delivered.
Obviously, the edge of experience would have to go to the Hulkster.
But then again, the youth goes with the warrior.
Six of one, half a dozen of the other. That's why there are 68,000 strong here in Skydome for this one.
They only did the big moments together.
Right.
They only did pay-per-views together.
Exactly. And that was because they were on two separate shows.
Yeah.
Gorilla being on Challenge with Bobby. And Jesse being on Superstars with Vince.
And I would say, though, Quinn, that if we're really going to talk the best team, it's Gorilla and Jesse. I'm sorry. I really think it is.
I mean, I think it's just, I just find it equal to Bobby and Gorilla.
Do you really? Okay. Well, can we say this at least? Are they both going to make it?
I think they're both going to make it. But I think we also need to establish Bobby and Gorilla first before we, you know, just so we have fresh in our brains.
Really? You want to put it? Okay. That, so we know they're both going on. It's just a matter of who goes first.
Right.
All right. Well, tell me your case for Bobby and Gorilla, okay?
Bobby and Gorilla, to me, it's entertainment. They can make a boring thing more fun, even more so than Jesse and Gorilla, like you had said.
British Bulldog may have cracked a rib on that one.
No big deal.
I will give you that because they did Challenge, which was never exciting to begin with.
Right.
You ever hear that song, Kiss the Gold Goodbye? Remember that song?
No, I've never heard that song.
Sorry. They did Primetime, which, as we mentioned on the Bobby show, if you take away Gorilla and Bobby from Primetime, it's horrible matches.
Yeah, I mean, it's just house show junk.
Yes.
That's like they had a camera at it.
That's
like,
all it is.
Yeah.
No one cares about like Red Rooster versus Buddy Lee Parker or whatever it is.
Like one of the McGee guy versus somebody.
Yeah, or the Glamour Girls.
Yeah, some crap
anyone.
Like that.
Leilani Kai got the victory, and I must say, it was completely legal.
But not only did they do like that, they did do the big stuff too, which was really cool.
Yeah, when Jesse left, all of a sudden now they're like, well, I guess Gorilla and Bobby got to do the pay-per-views because Vince McMahon ain't doing them.
No, only when he had to.
Yeah.
He didn't do them until later.
Only when his back was against the wall.
Pretty much, actually, yeah.
Welcome to the very first ever WWF in your house!
I would say that they are the funniest team, mm-hmm. definitely.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
Tito always keeps himself in good shape. Let's not eat any of his mom's cooking.
Look, we love Bobby.
Yeah.
He's still not as good of an analyst in that role as Jesse Ventura was.
He isn't as good
as an analyst,
but he makes up for it in the entertainment. I mean, like, think about WrestleMania 7, like the Katao thing.
You got to eat 1,100 bowls of rice in under an hour.
Right. Or like the offhand remark at like SummerSlam where about like Virgil getting his ass beat. Like,
what did I miss?
Yeah, what did I miss? Oh, the usual. Yeah.
No, I know. And he's great at Survivor Series.
Yeah.
He's great at Tuesday in Texas. Rumble 92, obviously.
WrestleMania 8.
His crowning achievements are those two.
Yeah.
If you want to be fair to Flair, you got to be fair and say that's a heck of a run. Only a man as fair as Flair would show up at WrestleMania.
Will you stop?
What are you talking about? Yell at me.
If you were just talking about Bobby as an analyst and to prop him up with Gorilla here.
Yeah.
You have to look at Bobby as an analyst post Gorilla too and think
he's always good.
He's always good.
He's always
good.
You're right.
So
he's always
funny. I think it's a little unfair to say he's like a weak analyst.
I didn't say he was weak. I just said he's not as good as Jesse.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a very fair comment to make, Michael.
I can't believe
we're arguing who goes on first. Can we put them both in?
I think they're equal, and I think that they both should go in, and I think everyone stands the test against them.
Double induction?
Yeah.
It's rare, but we do it sometimes.
For the first one,
a double induction. Gorilla and Jesse and Gorilla and Bobby Heenan in one shot. Double induction. Welcome. With those two out of the way, I would have to say the number three
mm-hmm.
is the modern equivalent, well, not even modern anymore, but the 90s equivalent to those two, the iconic duo of Jim Ross and Jerry the King Lawler.
Of course.
Hi again, everybody. I'm Jim Ross alongside Jerry the King Lawler.
Without question. I mean, they were the voice of that generation.
They were.
When people think of wrestling and like the people talking in the background during all the he's got a Zamboni and like all, like any like crazy
Sable,
all crazy know? Austin stunt
right.
or yeah. like Mankind falling off a cell,
people's elbow suck
like,
it all
a
of that
spear from a 20-foot ladder or like anything yeah you know
puppies.
What I mean puppies JR.
Yeah, puppies.
Right?
I think
Braun
he's broken,
panties.
Broken in half. I know we're saying a lot of JR lines.
But they were both there, man.
But King was hilarious during most of it.
He actually was. King was a good commentator up until, I've always said, until he left in 01.
Until Heyman took his place and
yes.
then he came back.
And he didn't care anymore and
right.
didn't have to care anymore.
Right.
He's only gotten worse, you know, honestly.
Yeah.
But man, JR and King from 97, 98 until 01, phenomenal.
They were fantastic.
They were really good.
And they just made those moments. And you know what's kind of cool is their career is not defined by pay-per-views as much as it is by the weekly broadcasts.
Absolutely. They were the voices of Monday Night Raw.
Right.
So much so to the point that where JR had that bout of Bell's palsy in late 98, early 99,
mm-hmm.
and we were subject to Michael Cole and it is a young Michael Cole.
Yeah, he didn't know what he was doing.
And King.
Road Dogg is relentless. And so is Gangrel. Gangrel's like a pit bull. He keeps coming back for more.
It really did suffer.
Yes.
It really did detract from the product.
Right. It was like King and JR were like your buddies on the couch
yeah.
every Monday night.
They had a great chemistry.
Right. And they made you feel like you were almost with them or something.
They did.
Yeah.
And they were different than a Gorilla and Bobby in the sense that King was extremely annoying to JR when he wanted to be.
Yeah, but King also could throw in he knew what he was talking about.
He knew what he was a great analyst during that period of time.
Yes.
And he doesn't get enough credit for that.
Yes.
He could actually play the serious card really well.
If he needed to, yeah. And that's what I mean by King could help do that.
He was awesome. He does
yeah.
not, I will say this, Jerry Lawler as a single, as a announcer or mm-hmm. whatever, he's not one of the best of all time. He's good.
Yeah.
But when he was with Jim Ross, he was fantastic.
Right.
He's up there with early 90s Bobby Heenan. He's up there with late 80s Jesse Ventura.
Right.
I will say this. The late 90s and the early 2000s, the Attitude Era, basically, would not have been the same if it wasn't those two behind the announce desk. I mean, it wasn't the same when it wasn't the two of them.
Yeah.
If it was Cole and King, when it had to be, sometimes it wasn't as good.
Right.
If it was JR, and sometimes it was like Michael Hayes or Cornette.
I'm Jim Ross alongside Michael Hayes.
Occasionally.
Yeah.
It wasn't as good.
Yeah. Or any of that crap that you would see on like Heat or Velocity or whatever.
Shane McMahon and all that and whatever.
Yeah.
They, I think, are the number three.
I do too.
I don't think anything's going to knock them off.
Right.
All right, so are we safe to put them on?
Yeah, I think four is really going to be the discussion here.
I think you're
right. That's going to be the hardest one.
I think you're right. So for number three, Jim Ross and Jerry the King Lawler. Well, Michael, what do you got?
I got a weird one for you. I think this one's really good. I want to talk about Vince and Jesse.
Did I call that one or what, McMahon?
Not
he certainly did. You're saying the referee's incompetent?
I'm saying the referee made a mistake.
They're very good.
That's a very good combo, right?
Yeah, they did, for those of you that might not know, mm-hmm. they did Superstars together from 86 until 1990 with Bruno from 86 to 88.
But also, they did Saturday Night's Main Event.
Correct. And that was where the mainstream fan that maybe didn't, the more casual fan,
right,
that maybe didn't watch every episode of Superstars.
Yes.
But if it was the guy that was like, hey, Saturday Night Live's not on, what is this?
Yeah, exactly. And they were great at putting over the product.
They were.
They were.
It's the same Jesse that we were talking about.
Right, it's the same Jesse, but with Vince, Vince's strength always is that he knows exactly what he's selling.
Yes.
It's his company.
More than anyone.
Like, he knows exactly what should be emphasized.
Absolutely.
And Jesse was like a punctuation mark on the end of it.
Very well said, Quinn.
You know, like, he was just really good at working with Vince in that,
oh, yeah.
in that vein. And I think Vince had a lot of partners over the years.
Tons of them.
But I think Jesse was his best partner.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
I can't argue with that. Jesse was great with Vince because he approached it differently than he did with Gorilla.
Yes. And Vince, you know, to his credit,
he was awesome with Jesse.
I'm saying Vince, to his credit as the owner, he didn't have an ego.
No.
He let Jesse jab at him, make fun of him.
He would let
push
him say,
around.
Shut up, McMahon.
Yeah, exactly.
Shut up, McMahon.
There wasn't this weird, like, strange,
this
like,
is really
bossing.
His boss or something, right?
Yeah.
He basically he let Jesse treat him like a dweeb.
Right.
Like a jerk.
I mean, you could actively tell if you look back retrospectively. You can tell Vince has told Jesse from the very beginning.
Oh,
it's like, I'm not the boss. I'm Vince McMahon, the dweeby announcer.
One of the boys. You
yeah.
know?
Like,
that whole thing.
Just jab at me like you're jabbing at Gorilla or something.
And Vince could give it back too.
Right.
Which was great.
Yeah.
Vince would go back at him. But the best thing about the way they framed it is, whereas Gorilla and Jesse had a respect for each other in a kayfabe sense, Vince and Jesse didn't. And it was great. It was entertaining. It was really fun.
It was really, really cool, actually.
And they did all the Saturday Night's Main Events except for a few.
And I think they make those very memorable.
They absolutely do. Voice of Vince, sorry, folks. I know everyone loves to make fun of Vince as an announcer.
Yeah.
80s Vince is damn good.
Yeah. Oh, it's he just seems so excited. It's like he's at his peak. He's not too old yet. And
no.
he's just so happy that like it's all working out. Like, you can kind of tell,
yeah, you
right?
can tell he's jubilant.
Yeah.
What's he doing now?
He made that mistake earlier. Why is
he's
going
on the
up
second
again?
Rope? What's going to happen? Clothesline, the giant goes down.
When people make fun of Vince McMahon, the announcer, they're usually thinking of the 95 to 97 era.
One, two. Oh,
no,
it's the closest. Him.
Yeah. Oh, Mantar, yeah. you know, Quang.
Yeah.
Welcome back, everyone, to more WWF action. Quang awaiting the presence of Doink the Clown.
Where everything sucked and Vince knew it sucked and he was the only person that could try to make it look like it didn't.
Yeah, and he's just shilling shit, basically.
Awful.
And, you know, there's other commentary teams, too. I don't know if you want to. I don't want to put that in just yet.
I don't either. We haven't mentioned WCW yet.
Right.
And one reason is because there's not too many. However, if we go back to WCW World Championship Wrestling television show.
Yes.
Tony Schiavone,
mm-hmm.
excellent announcer in his own right anyway.
And Schiavone had some good partners.
I don't know what it is. People seem to hate David Crockett as an announcer.
I love that team.
I do,
too. I love it.
I love it, too.
David Crockett along with Tony Schiavone. Tony, we've got a lot of great wrestling stars here.
A very exciting 2 hours of World Championship Wrestling here today, David.
David Crockett as the brother of the owner.
Yes.
You know, or he, I guess he kind of is the owner, sort of.
Not really, though.
Like, he would, like, inherit it, technically, if, you know, they had not sold it. He was, like, right. Partial owner or something.
Yeah, I know, but.
Anywho.
Yes.
He is, like, so excited about the product, but not even in, like, a I'm selling this kind of way. And, like, I just fucking love this. Like, he's like, he would, even though he's supposed to be a face, like, he was such a big mark for Ric Flair. Like, you can just
awesome.
Tell. It was fantastic. It was fun.
A lot of people hate David Crockett as an announcer,
great.
But I like him.
He's so excited. He's laughing with everyone, the good guys and the bad guys. It's like he just seems like he wants to be there.
Freedom! Right off the top rope!
Drops that knee right in the back.
That put Rossi's lights right out!
It's a very good point, Quinn. You know what, though? Tony Schiavone.
Yes.
He also made a great team in WCW and in WWF with Jesse Ventura.
Right.
They're the voice of the early 90s pay-per-views.
And this is where I think it's interesting. Because on one hand, I love the jubilance of the Schiavone and,
Crockett.
And Crockett team. And, you know, Schiavone being the straight man
sure.
and calling the moves. Mm-hmm. And David Crockett being so happy just to be there.
Yep.
And it just makes you want to watch it. And that's
sure.
a great show.
Sure, sure.
On the other hand, you got Jesse and Schiavone. And it's more like a Vince McMahon and Jesse combination.
Yes, it is.
Like, it's Jesse taking jabs at Tony
oh,
Schiavone.
Yeah.
But it's still fun. And
it's great.
It still works.
All of a sudden, because he's a crowd favorite, you're going to come on board and say, oh, he hurt his ankle 48 times this last year.
Did I say that? Did I accuse him of lying?
Yes.
It still works exactly how the Vince McMahon thing. All credit to Schiavone there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He did a great job.
He's awesome with him.
Yes, Tony Schiavone is great. And another partner Tony Schiavone was great with was Bobby the Brain Heenan.
He was, and they don't get enough credit either, especially...
Yeah.
And, you know, they had Dusty with them sometimes. Sometimes
and that
was
fun, too.
Yeah, and sometimes it was Tanay.
Yeah.
But if it was Tony and Bobby, which it was, 94, 95, they were great together.
Yes.
I'm not Tony Schiavone. I'm Bobby the Brain Heenan.
One other thing I think is a good team, and it's one of the only three-man teams I actually like, and I know you're going to, you might have
oh, no.
some problems with it, but I really enjoy in the Nitro era, in the second hour of Schiavone, Brain, and Tanay. I love the idea of Tanay knows
yeah.
the cruiserweights. Like, he's like the more, they introduced a third man, but the right way, like a special technical
that's
analyst.
That's me applauding.
Yes.
Because you're correct
like,
about that.
That's one of the only three-man teams where it was done absolutely right. Brain making the jokes.
And the analysis
Schiavone
a little bit.
Somewhere in the middle knows like the moves.
Play by play.
But then you got Tanay, the specialist.
The specialist.
Like, he knows about Lucha Libre or Japanese wrestling. Like, somebody that can contribute that to the desk because Schiavone doesn't have that experience and he needs that help.
I'm going to tell you something, Quinn. I think they would be my number four.
You think?
I do. But I think we need to mention something here. Now, I don't know who Gordon Solie teamed with. Could we just,
most of the time, nobody.
Could we just call him a team unto his own?
Well, if you're going to do that, you'd have to call Joey Styles as a team unto his own, too.
Fair enough.
I mean, I would think that's entirely more entertaining. I'm sorry. Gordon Solie puts me to sleep.
Moving out now against Mike Starbuck. One fall, 10-minute time limit.
Well, there's a suplex there.
I know we're going to get fans that hate that, but he sucks. He just sucks.
Quinn just finally said it.
Yeah.
Quinn's been so diplomatic this whole show. 50 episodes, he's been so nice about it. Quinn does not like Gordon Solie, and I don't disagree with Quinn.
Right.
Suplex.
And as much as I want to put these teams in themselves kind of thing,
like
I think it's
Joey,
not
yeah, it's not right.
I think it's not fair to the good teams.
Right. And Joey was great by himself.
He was really good by himself, actually.
And if we were doing single commentators, him and Gordon would make it because they were
right.
both really good by themselves.
Yes.
Okay.
Here's one that I think we should talk about for 1 second as far as like a more modern team.
Sure.
Taz and Cole.
He goes, let's drop toe hold as he pulled Kennedy in. Yeah, great fine hook those legs up. Got to watch here. Got to get to those ropes. Very smart ring presence by Ken Kennedy.
Ken Kennedy shows a lot of better instincts in the ring. We've talked about that over the past couple of months.
I believe that Ken Kennedy shows a lot of poise in the ring.
Taz and Cole, like 02 to 06.
They were great.
07.
Yeah.
whenever that was.
Yeah.
They were awesome.
Yeah, they were really fun.
They were fun.
They were like Taz, to me, you're going to yell at me, but more than Jesse. He was a wrestler at the commentary table.
Hold the phone there. Come on,
I think
Quinn.
Taz is the best it gets as far as a wrestler's wrestler at the table.
I don't know if I can endorse that statement.
I don't know what to tell you. I mean, Jesse's already on the Rushmore.
You're right.
So
he is. Gorilla's on twice, to be fair.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, Taz is great with Cole. Other than that, are either of them that good? No, but no. I guess it's about teams, right?
Yeah, this is a team thing. But
they were fun.
At the same time, I don't know if I could put it above Bobby,
Tony,
Tanae, and Tony.
I think that's actually, I didn't think of that until later on, but I think that actually might be the number four here.
It's really good, and it's like a moment in time.
Yep.
Like Nitro at its peak.
It's going to be the biggest battleground in the history of our sport.
That's the thing. If we're going to put JR and King on,
right,
and they were known for their weekly Monday Night Raw.
Yeah.
The voices of Tony and Bobby and Tanae, well, maybe not as soothing and comforting, are still like way up there.
Yeah, and I really just thought it was a great thing that WCW did with the idea behind Tanae. I love it. I really think that's interesting, and it was never done right. He's a guy that knows about certain things.
People love to crap on Shivani.
Right.
Shivani was good.
No, Shivani.
I
think Shivani could come back today and he would be fine.
You ever hear him talk on this podcast? He sounds great.
Yeah. Shivani is one of the most underrated announcers
ever.
It's only fitting that one of his teams would make a list like this. And I think
that's the best one.
As much as I like the David Crockett one personally,
this is the best one.
This is the Shivani building over time thing.
He was awesome.
Yeah.
Look. No one is JR.
Yeah.
And for some reason, people think we don't like JR. We love JR.
Oh, I love JR.
We love his work.
Right.
We're very big fans of JR.
Yeah.
That is the best counter to JR that WCW could have possibly had.
Yeah, they knew what they had with Shivani.
He was awesome.
Yeah.
But the Tanae team, that probably occurred the most.
Right.
I don't like Tony and Zbyszko because Zbyszko sucks.
And I was also wanting to say this.
Yeah.
The fact that they were the first hour only like made you want Tanae, Shivani, and Brain like so bad.
It was like countdown to the Brain.
It was like, thank God, like the good team is here.
I see an elephant flying. I'm not watching Dumbo.
There he is, the gambler.
Yeah, it's like shut up. Yeah.
All right. So, are we in agreement, Quinn, for number four?
Yeah.
Tony Schiavone, Bobby Heenan, and Mike Tanae.
Yes.
All right. Here we go. All right. Well, that is our Mount Rushmore and Death Valley of commentary teams. And you know what, Donnie? We're not recapping this one. So
Not this week.
So, Quinn, why don't you start with one of the worst?
Well.
Oh, no.
I have a few.
Okay. What do we got?
The first one that always comes to mind.
Yes.
It involves, like, the Duke of Dorchester.
Oh, no.
Mike McGurk.
Yeah,
and I want to say Gorilla's there?
It's Bruce Pritchard.
Bruce Pritchard.
Not
that's
Brother
it.
Love.
Yeah.
Just Bruce Pritchard.
Yes.
What about this? Sir Martino is doing so many illegal moves, I can't believe it.
There's Sir Martino right
up there. He's down on the mat right where he wants him.
Okay, well, listen, I'm not defending it.
Yeah.
It was from a couple of Houston shows or one or two.
It's not just one show.
It's more than once they did this team.
That's why I think it applies here.
Well, first of all, I'd like to say something. Duke Daugherty is terrible.
He's might be the worst singular
thing
to ever exist in WWF.
Ow, the wrestling! I like the wrestling! Like, shut the f*** up, first of all.
And I know we had, like, worst WWF wrestlers or whatever, but I feel like he didn't even wrestle enough.
It's not.
Either.
It's just him existing.
Yeah.
I'm gonna write a letter. I'm gonna do more than that.
He has the worst existence.
Yeah.
Like, if we did overall worst existers, he's one of them.
Yes.
So you have that.
Yeah.
Then you have Mike McGurk. Now, I love Mike McGurk.
Sure, yeah.
Quinn, despite her hat, hair, and her circus costume.
Leaky faucet.
And she's in the men's room, and she's like, the following campaign, and Helen, you know, and all that stuff. Fine. I like Mike McGurk. However, behind the commentary microphone.
Horrible.
Not really a place for her, so to speak. And it's not because she's a woman. It's because she's bad at it.
Yes.
If you're not happy with this, you should write a letter.
She's better than Duke Doherty, okay? Yeah. She's still bad at it. Throw into that mix, though. Here's the straw that stirs this freaking cocktail of shit. Bruce Pritchard. No, not Brother Love. No, no, no. Yes. God forbid.
Yeah.
That time, Hercules setting up for the clothesline at San Martino a little bit too quick.
I'm doing the commentary on the thing now, and this is Mike McGurk, and that's Duke Doherty, and then it's horrible. Like, you don't even want to watch the show?
It might be the singular worst commentary team to ever exist, ever.
I have, however, Quinn, seen Sean Mooney about 2 months into his tenure.
Yes.
Lord Alfred Hayes. Which, okay, fine.
That's fine. I like those two.
Yeah, you like, how about this for a freaking garnish? Superstar Billy Graham.
Oh.
It's been a good start for the Hulkster at all this showcase match.
And Andre the Giant, with that shirt still wrapped around the throat of Hulk Hogan.
Before we get too far into this match.
One of the worst commentators I've ever seen.
Listen, what was the thing where Superstar Billy Graham was at, like, SummerSlam or something? What is that?
88 with Gorilla.
Yeah.
And he ruins the show.
Yeah.
Like, I don't watch it because of him now.
Yeah.
He's awful. Hulk Hogan is my hero, daddy. I don't like the Russo brothers, daddy.
Why is he such a mark for Hulk Hogan, who stole his gimmick and basically, like, stole his life? Like, if you really, like, think about it.
Stole his steroids.
Yeah.
Stole his gimmick.
Exactly.
I don't know. He sucks. But we're talking, like...
This is teams, though.
These are things that happen, like, once or twice.
Yes.
What about regular teams, Quinn? And here's one for you, and it ain't that retro, but guess what? It happened. Michael Cole. Okay. We're off to a great start. Yeah. King Lawler, but we're talking, like, late 2000s
where he
version.
Does not give a shit.
Right.
He doesn't watch anything.
He's a face. Yeah. And he's like your grandma sitting in with you.
I can't even find Dean Ambrose right now.
And Maggle, having fun, Maggle JBL.
Yeah, talking about, like, how they ate at a barbecue restaurant,
right.
Him and Cole, and, like, excluding King.
Oh, stop. You don't have five friends. You don't have any friends. You've never had a friend. Don't tell me and King we don't like you.
Who is okay with these three people hosting Raw every week
a
million years?
Let's think about it. In theory, this may sound good when they initially put it together. It
may sound good in 2002.
Right. However, the problem here is the whole... Like you said, the King not understanding, like, where he is or what's going on.
Wait, does that mean that he's going to do that to him?
Yeah, every week he doesn't get what's said.
Right.
Like, if there's a stipulation to a match, he'll ask, like, 2 seconds afterwards, like, does that mean if he loses, he loses the title?
Right, exactly.
Like, right after they said, like, it's going to be a title match on a ladder title match or something.
Does that mean it's a title match?
Yeah.
Now, Michael Cole, as a lead guy, look, he's no JR. He's no Vince. He's no Gorilla. Adequate, yes. I can't shit on it. He's not horrible.
Right.
But he's not, like, the best play-by-play guy
ever. The problem with Michael Cole leading your team is he only should have ever been Sean Mooney.
Yeah, or the SmackDown guy with Taz.
Yes, he should have never moved beyond that.
I agree with you.
He is not that. He is not a grizzled veteran announcer.
He was fine on SmackDown with Taz.
Right, on the secondary show.
No complaints. Everyone liked him.
That's fine.
Bring him over to Raw with King?
Right.
Even him and King by themselves are bad.
Yes.
Without JBL.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, it's a bad team.
It's a really bad
team,
Quinn.
It's a bad team, and it lasted a while.
I want to put it in as number one because...
Really? Over Duke Doherty
yes.
and Michelle Pfeiffer.
And Michelle Pfeiffer and Pamela Paulshock. Yes.
Yeah.
Because when I watched Raw during that period of time, I had to deal with that shit. They were horrible.
Ziggler's got to get off the
air. Look at Big Show now.
Oh, and Sin Cara tossed out of the ring by the world's largest athlete.
They shouldn't have done that on Cinco de Mayo.
Big Show has been a one-man battle royal eliminator.
I will acquiesce. Go for it.
And we're keeping die. Don't worry. For number one... Cole, King, JBL.
Die.
That's out of the way. Now, I know you're going to hang on to the Duke Pritchard thing here.
It's so bad.
I'm not saying it's good.
Okay, it's not even just us. Like, I have seen this discussed in other places that it is, like, the definitive, like, worst commentary team to ever exist.
The only thing I can say, anything with Craig DeGeorge is worse. He is awful.
Look at Yamazaki take care of both of them.
Amazing.
I don't know. I think it's that international language you're talking about.
And people will agree to that.
Well, to be fair, Craig DeGeorge was never really supposed to do that. I mean, he wasn't.
Neither was Mike McGurk.
Right. But The Craig DeGeorge pairings were less frequent even than that Duke Doherty.
That
somehow
only happened a couple of times, I swear.
Yes, but all the same team, whereas the DeGeorge thing, it's like he's like with some random person like week to week, like he was never like in a stable thing.
You know what I never liked, and God bless him, Gorilla? I never liked Gorilla with Lord Alfred Hayes.
Nah.
Not really.
I
couldn't call him
it
worse, but I just want to get that out there.
I actually am a fan of Mooney and Hayes, though.
Love them.
Yeah.
They will not hit Death Valley.
No, they will
not.
And
we're not being ironic.
Yes.
We're not jumping on the Sean Mooney now has a podcast bandwagon.
Or he's been on our show. It's like, I actually like that
I've
team.
Always liked
yeah.
him.
They're fun.
Like, I literally have always liked that team.
Well, you mentioned before this encounter, Lord Alfred Hayes, that Jake was going to have to depend on not only his skill, but his cunning tactics.
A bad team with good people. Gorilla Monsoon,
mm-hmm.
Vince McMahon. You ever hear that?
It's not good.
Survivor Series 94?
Yeah, because Vince is like playing Gorilla's role. And
Gorilla's
like
playing Gorilla's
Bobby.
Role. Yeah, but he can't.
Gorilla's like Bobby or Jesse or something.
But it doesn't work.
No, it doesn't.
In fact, anytime Gorilla was not the play-by-play guy,
it was stupid.
It didn't work.
What was that time like Gorilla was like in 98 on commentary or something? Like
with Kevin Kelly and Michael Cole?
That sucked.
You know, but a guy like Tyson, who's a loose cannon, you know, and with the power that he possesses,
oh,
there's no telling what he's going to do.
Speaking of loose cannons, Flash Funk now on fire.
That was awful.
It was, you're right.
It's a really bad team.
It's a really bad team. Oh, I got it. When was Mark Madden on Nitro?
Because
Mark Madden on Nitro with whatever team. Can
it was with Schiavone, I think.
And Scott Hudson.
You gotta like Vampiro here. Vampiro is an expert in the ways of sadism, in the ways of brutality.
Okay, yeah. That was bad. That was awful. Mark Madden was
he's
worst.
Horrible.
Like, I don't know why he existed.
No disrespect to Tony Schiavone. It's Mark Madden that drags his team down. He sucked. And you know who he replaced, Quinn? Just guess which popular heel commentator that Mark Madden replaced.
Bobby the Brain Heenan?
Yes.
Die, die, die.
Die, die, die.
So for number two, that shit. Remember when Byron came out to do commentary
yeah.
by himself when
yes.
Michael Cole like died on Raw?
Yeah.
Because of Brock?
Brock killed him or whatever.
And Byron was so bad by himself that they had to send out King.
Yes.
That's
King
the worst
had
team.
To like carry the team.
That might be one of the worst things I've
yeah,
ever seen.
Yeah, but okay, I will say this.
Yeah.
I think, I don't even know how this is possible.
Yeah.
But we're talking about a King who is broken down and doesn't
oh, yeah.
care
doesn't
anymore,
care
right?
All.
Saw the new Intercontinental Champion Daniel Bryan in action earlier on tonight against Dolph Ziggler. Successfully defending his championship.
And he somehow turned that into a team that was like feasible.
I'm half tempted to say fucking Schiavone and Zbyszko because Zbyszko sucks.
That was pretty bad.
He's grating on
what,
the ears.
What about Eric Bischoff and Mongo and Bobby the Brain?
I almost died
yeah,
that.
But Bobby the Brain was there.
I know. Eric Bischoff is not that good, though.
I don't think he's horrible. Like, he's
worse
a step
Vince.
Below Vince. Like, but he's not, like...
He's
not,
a couple
like,
of steps.
We're not talking about, like...
He's a quarter mile
below
Vince.
It's not like Vince is, like, on a mountain and Bischoff's at the bottom of the mountain.
No,
it's
Vince
not...
standing on the top of a pile of dirty laundry.
Yeah, it's
and Bischoff's
more,
not.
It's closer like that.
Right.
But, yeah, that... But with him and Mongo with Pepe there...
That's awful. I know people have, like, these...
I don't know. I have a weird fond memory,
you
but
know how
it
you
is
think,
bad.
You know how you think Gordon Solie sucks?
Yeah.
Mongo McMichael sucks. I don't know what you're defending. They're wrestling. Good God, Gertie. My dog is wearing denim now. Oh, no, he's not. No, he's wearing swishy pants.
Don't underestimate Mongo!
Here's what the hell was he doing there?
Here's the weird thing about it. Like, it's like...
Okay,
it's
okay.
So weird and silly.
I have a worse version of that, and it happened earlier.
I think I know where you're going with this.
I don't know if you do, but if you do, I'd be very impressed. I'm going to take you back, folks, to 1993.
Yes, I do know where you're going.
January to April.
Yes.
Monday Night Raw
yeah.
had Vince McMahon, fine. Randy Savage, yeah.
I know exactly what you're...
Rob Bartlett.
What the hell?
This was a guy that was kind of okay at being funny sometimes on Imus.
Yes.
First of all, Imus. Quack, quack.
Yeah.
That was me. That sounded like Imus, but that was actually me.
Yeah, it sounded like an AM radio.
Imus. He was clearly out of his element calling wrestling matches, because what he did, and this is probably one of the reasons why he didn't last, he almost broke kayfabe. Like, he made fun of wrestling.
Yeah.
Hey, Vince, don't regulations indicate that Yokozuna should be wearing a bra?
Now, funny guy, sure, I'm fine. If you like Bill Clinton impressions and Mike Tyson impressions and whatever 90s shit floats your boat, fine.
Yeah.
Floats your carnival cruise. But Rob Bartlett was... This didn't happen once.
Yeah.
For like 3 months, he was on the Raw commentary team.
It was a while.
No disrespect to Vince. We know where we stand with Vince.
Yeah.
No disrespect to Savage, who was an enigma as a commentator.
The winner gets dinner with Skinner.
I would like to put this team on, Quinn.
Okay, but wait. Sorry. I got one more for you.
Fine. We have two more to go, so
and
what do you got?
It's recenter.
Okay.
Kevin Kelly and Steve Corino.
Super kick!
Dr. Lethal!
It's so bad. Like, it...
Look, yeah.
It's, like, one of the worst things I've ever heard.
You know what?
And I... Listen, I understand, like, Kevin Kelly is, like, he's grown over time, and I think he's better
than...
Yeah,
yes.
No, I just mean he's better. But Steve Corino is the most heinous thing ever on comment. Like, he is... I don't know. He might be worse than the Duke.
He is so twitch worthy, like grating, just
right.
He makes you want to not watch the show.
Right.
Literally for me, he
the
does.
Super kick crap, like all that shit. Ugh.
Now, and the thing about Kevin Kelly, if we're gonna say that Michael Cole was only meant to maybe ever achieve SmackDown, Kevin Kelly might have only been ever meant to achieve CZW.
I think Kevin Kelly was only meant to achieve, like, almost peeing his pants during the Pillman gun incident.
Very good.
That was his finest hour.
Or interviewing The Rock.
Yeah.
Ad nauseum, you know, right. in 2000.
Just somebody The Rock could make fun of.
That's about it. He's not a main play-by-play guy. Sorry.
Yeah.
And I know he does the Place to Be Nation voiceover, like, hey, I'm Kevin Kelly. Listen to this shit.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation.
No, thanks.
But it doesn't matter. He was a bad commentator. He's still a bad commentator. And Steve Corino, is it a gimmick? I don't... Why is he that bad?
I don't get it.
Is his point to be as bad as possible?
Are we just old? Like, is there, like, literally, like, some inside joke where they were like, who... One of the boys that works for the company who's getting older, who would suck worse? Like, maybe Brent Albright and, like, Adam Pearce or something, and they all had them, like, speak for 5 minutes,
right, right,
and they
right.
were like, they just picked him. Yeah.
Die, die, die.
Because I can't.
Yeah.
I can't watch ROH because of that. I'm not even kidding.
What about the time when they had Stryker and Yoshitatsu?
Oh, on New Japan?
Yeah, and there was like one other person there. I forget.
JR.
Matt Stryker
in Japan.
And Yoshitatsu.
Because JR's like, oh, this guy looks like Bruiser Brody. This guy is like Stan Hansen. Oh, this guy's also kind of like Bruiser Brody, but a little different. Like, what was he talking about?
It wasn't too hard. At least
it was horrible.
Listen, here's the problem, Joe.
And then Yoshitatsu's like, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yoshitatsu added nothing.
Yeah.
But if we're going to go to one-time shots, then obviously people are going to bitch at us if we don't bring up the one, the only, Art Donovan.
Yes.
Art Donovan!
Now, what did he want to know?
How much everyone weighed.
How much does that guy weigh?
No. Like, okay, yeah. Here, it's like one of the worst events to ever occur to commentary as an industry as a whole. And I'm talking, like, think of, like, commentary, not even just wrestling. You know, Pat Summerall and John Madden. Or
excellent.
Joe Buck.
And
like,
Tim McCarver.
If we're talking, like, in the all of commentary to ever exist.
Right, whoever the hell does tennis.
If we had to rank something at the bottom of it.
Who does tennis, anyway?
I don't know, and I don't care. The point is, in all of commentary,
yes,
the worst ever thing to ever happen was to have Art Donovan be on a wrestling announcing team.
Gorilla, is he dead?
Did he have any prior wrestling experience?
No.
Was he ever an announcer for wrestling?
No.
Did he know what was going on around him?
No.
Do you think he thought it was real?
Yes.
Gorilla, is he dead?
Yeah. I think he legitimately, because he was like from a football player in like the 50s, which means he was probably born in the 30s or 20s or something
like
that.
Didn't they not wear helmets back then?
Yeah. He legitimately thought he was watching a real thing. He thought the weight classes like actually were should have been there.
Right.
It was confusing.
I think it's one of the best performances because he adds a childlike innocence to it.
Gorilla, is the partner getting any air at all?
That would only be equaled by King in 2014.
Even King didn't act that stupid.
Kind of.
No.
What does this mean, Cole?
Yeah, but he didn't ask people's weights consistently to the point of like annoying his partner, and then he ignores him.
You mean Gorilla?
Yeah.
Gorilla totally ignored him after like the third match.
Yeah.
Savage tried.
Randy. Randy. Yeah, exactly. Randy. Randy.
Hey, Randy.
Hey, Randy.
But that's a one-shot appearance.
Right.
Rob Bartlett hosted Raw for 3 months.
I'll give it to you there. Wait, I'm sorry. I can't give it to you there.
What else?
What about Vince and Bruno?
Well, Vince is great.
Good condition, Vince.
I know.
Horrible announcing, Vince.
But Vince is good. He talks the most. Bruno says like 6 words per show.
They don't talk.
Now, those guys are only 140, 50, 60, 70 pounds, Vince. Oh, in the ring the hard way.
Yeah. How are they anything?
There's no real banter or anything.
Nothing.
It harkens back to like the 40s on radio baseball.
Yeah.
Where you'd have like Mel Allen and Red Barber, but they don't talk to each other.
Yeah, during like the plays.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But the thing with Vince and Bruno is that Vince is still really good.
It's okay.
Okay.
He needed Jess to bring the best out of him.
He was great with Jesse. Go get that show, Vince. Ha, 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 ha. Yeah. She looks like a movie star.
Is this a movie star? Who is this?
Vince and Bruno.
No, they're not the worst. They're not one of the worst. Are you kidding me?
I'll say this. They're not as bad as Bartlett.
Rob Bartlett.
Get that on there.
Is worse than Mongo McMichael.
Yeah.
Was that what Bischoff was thinking when he brought in Mongo? He's like, hey, let's have this guy.
I think so.
That had nothing to do with wrestling.
Well, he did. Remember, he was at WrestleMania 11.
He was.
With Lawrence Taylor and all that.
Yeah. Can we please put the Rob Bartlett version of Savage and Vince in for number 4?
It's bad.
All right. So for number 4, Rob Bartlett with Vince McMahon and Randy Savage.
Die, die, die.
So that is our Mount Rushmore and Death Valley now of commentary teams. I guess a half thank you to Bill Yankowie for the suggestion.
Yeah, I guess so.
He inspired the idea here. So folks, at any time, of course, let us know your Mount Rushmore and Death Valley of commentary teams. And if you have any suggestions, whether it's for a Mount Rushmore and Death Valley, a review, or any future topics, please let us know. You can tweet at us at OVP Podcast. You can email us at ovppodcast@gmail.com. And of course, go to the Facebook group.
Yep. Go to the Facebook group, search for Our Vantage Point, join, and we'll let you in.
Yep. And of course, the website. We have the suggestion box. There's a bunch of ways to get in touch with us. But Quinn, when we come back, we are reviewing something. Back after this.
Well, what a treat we have for you. Craig DeGeorge, happy to be alongside Leaping Lanny Poffo. Title on the line there, Leaping Lanny.
Thank you very much, Craig DeGeorge. Yes, it is. You can feel the excitement in the air. Everybody's buzzing. And look at those pretty Japanese girls. Itsuki and Norio.
This truly has a world flavor here. The former tag team champions from Japan, Itsuki Yamazaki and Norio Tateno. That is Yamazaki in the dark, and in the light, Norio Tateno.
Look at the amazing flexibility on the challengers, but Judy Martin has come right away. Very aggressive.
Wow, they call them the Jumping Bomb Angels, and we saw two flying kicks by both of them. In the ropes, double clothesline. No, they didn't get it that time.
Leilani Kai managed to reverse the inertia.
What happened? Is that it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, it's a weird place to stop. No, I'm glad you did.
Hey, it's Sean Mooney. I may no longer be in the event center, but if I was, I'd be talking about our Vantage Point Retro Wrestling Podcast. All right, boys, let's get to it.
And welcome back, wrestling fans, to our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us for our Season 6 debut, Monday, October 2nd, 2017. Michael Quinn,
yes.
We are reviewing something.
Yep, we're back with reviews.
We're back with the reviews, and as always, you can send us your request to the suggestion box, and we will review just about anything we can.
Yeah, we don't care.
We really don't care.
As long as it's wrestling or involves wrestling.
Correct. In wrestling, or maybe, you know, a game show, a talk show, TV show with wrestlers.
Something like that.
Throw them on there. We'll do what we can. This one, Michael, is actually a request.
Mm-hmm.
It's from our good old friend Filippo Festuccia.
Ah, a frequent requester.
He is a frequent requestor,
yes,
if you will. And he wanted us to review this. This is ECW, October 5th, 1993, Hardcore TV.
Yep.
Now, Quinn, would you say ECW was still very much in its infancy during this period of time?
I would say yes, but tide was turning here. This is a significant episode in the history of ECW, I would say.
I would say so. There's a couple of reasons for that.
Yes.
And this is where Paul Heyman was booking by now. That started very shortly before this.
Right.
Eddie Gilbert was now phased out as of September.
No more of that crap.
Right. Now, at this time, folks, ECW stood for what, Quinn?
Eastern Championship Wrestling.
And they were an affiliate of the NWA, which we mentioned earlier as far as the territories.
Yes, that would be the National Wrestling Alliance.
That's correct, Michael. And that was kind of the NWA's last real dog in the fight here was ECW at the time. It was all they had left.
Their last dog in the fight, it's pretty junky.
It was. And NWA really was nothing after ECW withdrew from them in 1994.
Yes.
But let's watch this show here. So we open, Quinn. This is on the network, by the way. No dubious means to get this one.
No, nobody sent this in the mail.
No.
Although, you know, the quality of it, you would think somebody sent it in the mail.
Yeah, in fact, until the advent of the internet, the only way to watch ECW a lot was to receive it in the mail.
On VHS tape.
Exactly, yeah. Right. We get a weird, what I call an Amiga graphics intro, Quinn.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, it's of the time, right? It's
true.
The best they can do with the budget that they have. It's clearly just some, like, Telestrator-type graphical thing,
yes,
that you type the actual,
yep,
words in and that they come on. And it can do spinning effects.
Like, right, very very rudimentary effects,
yeah,
right? Wipes and dissolves and,
yeah,
stuff like
and
that.
Yeah, spin and move.
The, like, old video toaster, they, yeah, called it. We couldn't tell, however, if this was the music or if it was dubbed in.
It very well could have been the music. I'm not exactly positive because it didn't sound overdubbed. Like, what? It didn't sound like somebody put this on top of this.
No, but it could have been just junky enough that it could be dubbed in or not. We can't tell.
You know, you never know. The WWE Network could have just found, like, some music and then, like, processed it to sound junkier.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You never know with them. Ivan Koloff's in the intro? What?
Yeah, well, you know, it's basically whoever the hell visited ECW.
Like,
that's
right.
That's basically it. And everything's just junky. It's 93. And not that ECW would get much less junky. I don't know. I kind of have a weird, like, love for it, as you'll discover.
Yeah, you do.
Like, it hits a soft spot in my heart, Joe.
That's fine. I have no problem with that. If you liking it, no big deal. We're hosted by Joey Styles, a very early Joey Styles,
mm-hmm,
and Paul E. Dangerously.
Yes,
a two-man team.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to NWA Eastern Championship Wrestling. This is Joey Styles in the Eagle's Nest with Paul E. Dangerously.
Paul was sometimes on commentary, sometimes not on commentary.
Correct.
During this period of time for ECW.
And he was still very much Paul E. Dangerously.
Yes, he was also a manager. So, mm-hmm, it was kind of like how Brain would sometimes be on commentary,
yeah,
and then sometimes he wouldn't be. But a little less, there's no consistency at all.
Not really.
Yeah.
So it's the Public Enemy versus Jobbers, which is like some guy named Caruso, and then the Silver Jet.
Yeah, I don't get why he's called the Silver Jet. He's basically a dude with camo pants
and like
a long sleeve
blue shirt.
Kind of like Bunkhouse Buck.
Yeah, he's kind of dressed like Bunkhouse Buck, but worse.
Yes, suspenders.
He's like if you went to, like, Rickle,
yeah,
on a Saturday morning to buy something, that guy would be in there.
Right,
you know what I mean?
Except minus the mask.
Hopefully minus the mask. And some guy named Caruso that no one cares about. Body slam by Flyboy Rocco Rock, and then he misses an elbow. Caruso tags out too. Silver Jet. Big overhead suplex play by the Silver Jet.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed, Quinn, Paul is also calling play-by-play.
It's very confusing. It's almost like Paul is, like, teaching Joey, right?
Yeah.
So at some points, Joey's calling moves. At some points, Paul's... But this is how ECW was, and this was kind of the great thing about ECW, is Paul was teaching them on the job.
And the Silver Jet capitalizing on the advantage. Wham! Beautiful suplex by the Silver Jet, and he brings an elbow right down. Cover!
And he didn't mind it either. Like, it's not like Paul was probably getting mad at Joey. It was just like, no, this is my job. I run the company. I should be teaching Joey how to do this.
And he did a damn good job if that was the case, right?
And also, I noticed something here. Straw hat guy in the crowd.
Amongst the ECW fans that you would always see at the arena, which we are at the Bingo Hall, of course, the Viking Hall Arena in Philadelphia, Straw Hat Guy was one of the earliest ones.
Yes, one of the first. I mean, we're right at the end of 93 here, and Straw Hat Guy is already one of the faithful.
And he would stay.
Yes, I believe Straw Hat Guy, he was even at like ECW One Night Stand in like the 2000s.
He never left. Yeah. This guy is awesome, actually.
He is good.
So Rocco just kind of like punches the silver jet around, and then busts out like a springboard moonsault from the middle rope, the turnbuckle.
Yes, this gets a pop from even like Joey and Paul. They're like, holy shit, that's awesome.
Really cool move. And then Grunge finally tags back in and gets a big power slam. And you said to me, Quinn, he's the Bubba Ray of this team.
Yeah, he's just like the fat, like, less good one.
The sloppy one,
kind of. Like, I love Bubba Ray, but like Johnny Grunge and Bubba Ray, they're like the same thing.
Yeah, Johnny, would you say he's the grungy one?
Yeah, he's grungy, and Rocco Rock is...
He's the fly boy.
Yeah.
He's
I don't know if he's like D-Von, though.
He's not like D-Von.
No.
He doesn't get the tables,
because
first
Bubba's
of all,
a better wrestler than D-Von.
Bubba overall is just better than everyone in this match.
Yeah.
Reverse DDT by Grunge, and then a senton by Rocco gets the win. This was a match. It was a thing.
Yeah, I mean...
It's fine.
Again, you got to put this in the context of the fact that this is part of an overarching, like, long-term thing.
Sure.
It's not like, it's probably never was meant to be dissected as one episode. It's like 36 minutes or something.
Yeah, you're right. It was never meant to be isolated, you know, 25 years later by a couple of guys in their basement.
Right, exactly. So,
but we're doing it anyway.
Yeah, it's a TV match. That's the best way to put it.
It's no better or worse than what you would find on the other promotions at the time.
Or even like NXT Today in a jobber match.
It's a TV match. It's an opening TV match. Up next, Sabu. And this is his debut.
Big debut for Sabu, and he sure makes an impression, huh?
He does. He gets carted out on the gurney, you know, strapped to it.
With the things over his teeth.
Mm-hmm, the guard.
Yeah.
And is it 911 taking him out there, I thought, Quinn?
Right. He's ECW security.
Yeah, he's dressed like Dan Severn, by the way. He is, with like the shirt.
He always looked like Dan Severn anyway, just with a mullet.
Kind of was a mullet-y version.
Mullet and sweatpants. Well, Dan Severn had sweatpants on, too.
He did. So... Tasmaniac is in the ring. Sabu charges in, kicks him, and then leg drops him in his very snappy aqua blue pants that Sabu is wearing tonight.
Yes.
Very blue.
Very big for his debut here.
Yes. Sabu then misses a moonsault, not on purpose, because that's what Sabu does, is blow spots.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's Sabu's MO. He misses everything.
Even out of his debut here, missing shit.
I gotta give Taz some credit. He's trying to, like, catch him and, like, make it look real.
Look, Taz looks really stupid because he's in the Tasmaniac garb with a Tarzan singlet.
But the worker,
he's great.
I have no problem with him here.
He has the dumb hair and the dumb clothes, but he's still wrestling like Taz.
Yeah, he's like a professional.
He's awesome.
And he's a professional in a place where it's full of non-professionals.
Yeah, like, exactly.
It's no surprise that Taz made it to the WWE.
Absolutely
later on.
None. Yeah. He had a great look to him, just not for Vince McMahon, I guess.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
A little too small.
Mm-hmm.
Great wrestler though, and a great announcer, as we talked about earlier.
Yeah,
you know?
Fantastic.
Great announcer. So then Sabu throws a million chairs around, and then he grabs a table, back to the ring, and Sabu with a huge spinning kick. And Quinn, you said to me, every time you watch Sabu, you're waiting to see when he's gonna fuck up and kill himself.
Yeah. It's very, like, nerve-wracking watching Sabu wrestle.
It is.
It's like, is he going to break his neck here?
Right.
Because you know he breaks his neck. But here's my safe thing with Sabu.
Go ahead.
I always know that he broke his neck on that incident with the telestrator showing the neck breaking.
Yes.
And he had, like, the reddish-pink pants.
Yeah, it wasn't the blue pants.
With the white boots.
But it wasn't Taz. It was Chris.
Yeah. Chris Voldemort killed him. But
he did.
Like
he...
yeah. So, like he is to do.
Like, so then you said to me, you love how junky this is. It's just so
it's,
nice and pleasantly
it's
junky.
Charming. Yeah. Like, it's not clean cut, like how like everything was in 93, like WWF.
Yes.
I mean, WWF was in junky places like aircraft carriers.
Oh, yeah, later.
But like they cleaned them up. They like actually like swept the floor and like... you know, had better cameras and stuff. And WCW, you know, they were just in MGM studios,
yes,
or whatever.
Pretty much.
So they were like the super clean cup.
Paying tourists to cheer for Hulk Hogan.
This is in a place where nobody cleaned the place before they got there.
They
put some chairs down and ring, and they just said, do it.
Have fun, boys.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And then, of course, Sabu does, in fact, screw up his leg with some kind of flipping jump spot to the outside that he missed. Then Taz back inside with two nasty overhead suplexes for two and a casual clothesline by Taz. Mm-hmm. Then he brings one of those school bake sale tables into the ring. You know, the fake wood.
Yes, yes. And this is a really good, funny thing right here.
We may have also just seen Bill Apter. Not sure yet.
Not sure yet.
Because it could have been his competitor, George Napolitano.
You know, he was doing the thing with the Aptermax.
Quinn, what have I told you time and time again?
Don't call them the Aptermags.
So Sabu sets up a table and lays Taz on it, and of course it just breaks.
That's amazing. It just, he's like laid out on it. And mind you, Taz did, or Sabu, for that matter, he didn't even like put him on. He didn't like slam him on it or anything.
He like gently put him on it.
Gingerly put Taz on it, and the table like just breaks
right
on its
own.
Right in the middle, too. So you could tell somebody cut it beforehand. It's awful.
I really think that's what happened.
Yeah.
So Taz just suplexes him onto it. By the way, Joey's not that good yet. We'll see some good stuff later.
Yeah, he has his moments. This isn't it.
He's a diamond in the rough here.
Yeah.
And some nice biting by Taz. Sabu fights back with some really stupid backflips. Like,
yeah,
his offense is taunts.
He's backflipping into nothing. Like, he's just like, look, I can do a backflip. And then he would just, like, punch him, right? And then he does it again. And then he does it a third time, and I think it, like, backfires on him, doesn't it?
It does. It's like he's playing WrestleMania 2000 for N64.
Right. He's hitting the analog stick to taunt. And then, like, dig, 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 dig,
Hurricanrana and then misses a thing off the top rope. Sabu heads back up and hits some kind of a moonsault barely for the win.
Well, it worked.
It worked. He won.
Yeah, I mean, there was no doubt about it. He was going to win on that move.
I knew he was going to win. Yeah,
like that was like a finishing move.
Plus, Taz wasn't Taz yet. He was Tasmaniac, you know, this kind of respectable thing. He wasn't big fight Taz yet, you know.
Not big fight Taz, no. But he was at least like reputable in
mid-carder.
ECW.
Yeah, he was a solid mid-carder. And I'd say Sabu was okay. He only blew like 3 or 4 spots, you
know. Like a 2-star match for Sabu.
It's like a 3-spot match. You know, you should give Sabu the spot system.
That's true. A good debut for Sabu.
Not bad at all. We come back from a commercial and Sabu just moonsaults through a table for fun, I guess.
Yeah, he's just like hurting. Look, he's so dangerous. Yeah. He's hurting himself.
Really cool.
Well, that was a novelty back then.
Yeah, I know, but I don't feel like watching him slip around and sell for a table.
I know, I get it.
Anyway, promo with the shitty ass Rockin' Rebel about Sal Bellomo.
Rockin' Rebel sucks.
They like, both suck.
Sal Bellomo was like a perennial jobber in the WWE.
He's like their Mac Rivera.
Right. So basically, ECW got a Mac Rivera and they said, hey, we can make him into something. And he's like an Italian superhero or something.
He sucks.
Yeah, he's shitty. But apparently, like, he was a big deal in ECW before this. Like, everyone loves Sal Bellomo. He comes out with, like, stuff and gives it to the kids. Like, he's not on this episode, but
he was also in WWF as a shitty version of that. He was Sal Bellomo in WWF in the 80s.
But did he give things to kids in the crowd?
I don't know if he gave things. But why? Him and Rockin' Rebel? This is what I meant by ECW in its infancy.
Right.
You have the glimpses.
Right.
You know, you have the Taz.
Right.
You have the Sabu, the Paul Heyman, the Joey Styles.
Yes.
On the same breath, and Public Enemy.
Right.
In the same breath, you have the Rockin' Rebel.
Yes.
And Sal Bellomo. So we're still working out the kinks here.
All I can really say about that is this.
Yeah.
It's clear that Paul was figuring out who he wanted and who he didn't want.
Absolutely.
And he was going to give these guys a shot because Paul was always about, okay, like young talent, like let them give him a shot. And he does.
He does.
Fairly gives them a shot.
Yes.
By the beginning of 94, they're all kicked out the door, the ones he doesn't want.
Correct. And speaking of things like that, our next match here is Sandman, still in his scuba getup.
Yeah.
Versus the Metal Maniac. Quinn, you want to explain him?
The Metal Maniac, he's kind of like Brutus the Barber Beefcake.
Yeah.
And the Renegade.
Yeah.
Like if they had a baby.
If it were an uncle.
Or an uncle, it would be the Metal Maniac.
It would.
It's a horrible gimmick. It's basically a guy that likes heavy metal music and he sort of dresses like that. He also reminds me of something like if he should have something to do with like Micro Machines or something.
Yeah,
like,
very Micro Machiny.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the metal that he's interested in.
I don't know.
And Sandman here is not the t-shirt and Zuba's cigarette
beer.
Not
the good one, yeah.
He's like literally in scuba gear. Like, I wasn't really kidding.
It's weird because it's supposed to be like reputable wrestler, Sandman.
From the beach, you know, from Southern California.
Right, not he's going to make you fall asleep.
No, not Mr. Sandman.
Yeah, more like like Sandy Beach or one of those kind of guys.
Like he's from... Yeah, he's from the Sandy Beach. Straw Hat Guy looks very concerned, probably because he knows this is going to suck.
Yeah.
Sandman with an arm wringer, see, wrestler, and an Irish whip into a back elbow.
I can't believe I'm seeing moves from the Sandman.
I don't get what's going on here. One-footed dropkick by Sandman, and we have confirmed, Quinn, it is Bill Apter at ringside.
He's probably shooting picks for the Apter Mags.
Don't call them the Apter Mags.
Side slam by Metal Maniac and a big clothesline for two. Enziguri by Sandman, Quinn. Did I see that right?
Yes. Moves. It's so weird.
What is this?
You know what? He's not the worst, but he doesn't look good while he's doing it. So it's no surprise that they like figured out somewhere along the line. It's like, why don't we just have him be a brawler? Because he just looks like one.
Right. It's like, just, it'd be like having Foley be a technical wrestler.
Right. And I don't doubt that Mick Foley could do that if he's just a good wrestler.
He
and
can.
The Sandman, you kind of have to begrudgingly respect that, hey, this guy actually knew how to wrestle.
He just did.
Probably changed his style.
Correct.
Yeah.
It made more sense for him to just be the brawler in the sweatpants, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So, Sandman after the Zinziguri goes up top with a big flying clothesline for three.
Yeah.
That was an interesting match. Chris Michaels here says this
is... doing an Uncle Joey impression from Full House.
What? First of all, it's Joey. He was never their uncle.
Sorry.
Don't ever call him their uncle.
He's practically their uncle.
Not only am I a great dancer, but you can hang your coat on my antlers.
Kids love this stuff.
So...
He says this is no cartoon. What is this bumper, Quinn? You said this was a common thread.
It's on a lot of these ECWs back then. It's basically them being like, we're badass, so it's like, we're no cartoon like the WWF.
Right. We just saw a guy called the Metal Maniac.
Right. However, Chris Michaels does like, he's mocking cartoons by doing like a Bullwinkle impression or something.
Hey, Rocky, this is Chris Michaels, and you are watching NWA Eastern Championship Wrestling. And this is no cartoon.
It was very confusing because I didn't know what this guy was. Who is this guy?
He just works
Who's Chris Michaels?
He's a jobber.
Yeah, good for him. Our next match here is Superfly, Jimmy Snuka.
Yes, you heard that right.
The ECW television champion, that is.
Yes, you heard that right.
Versus Terry Funk. Now, Quinn alluded at the top of this review, this was historic, not only for the Sabu...
Right.
Debut. But Terry Funk here would be a big player in ECW from this period of time until 97.
Yeah, I mean, Terry Funk was the veteran that was willing to put people over in ECW in a time where that wasn't common, as they'll tell you in the ECW DVD.
That's right. And Terry Funk really did, with his wild-eyed, crazy old man, hardcore demeanor, really did lend them a huge breadth of credibility that they needed.
Right, as a former world champion. And not to mention, to be fair, Jimmy Snuka, that's like a big thing. It's been a long time. However, he looks like crap.
He does.
Can't believe how quickly the Superfly degenerated into like a fat like loser, basically.
He's very puffy and just like slippery looking. You know?
Like, what happened to this guy?
Leathery.
He's losing to Undertaker at WrestleMania. At least looks like a superstar. Two years before this.
And he was wearing Steve Allen's wife's underpants the year before that.
Here he is, like you see, like fat roly poly.
Very, very roly. Anyway, this is a cage match. Escape rules for the ECW TV title. I really don't want to see it. Quinn's all happy about
it's
it, so
okay.
Whatever,
I mean,
it's fine.
It is what it is. It's to say Terry Funk is still a threat, basically.
Exactly. Right? They're selling it like this is the road to his comeback to the NWA world title.
Right. I just roll my eyes at that because, first of all, Terry Funk ain't winning the NWA world title in 1993 or whatever. Second of all, who gives a shit about the NWA title in 1993?
Would you even say, Quinn?
Who cares?
Yeah, exactly.
So apparently Snuka is the master of cage matches, but I have to ask an honest question. I'm not being a jerk. Didn't he lose all those famous cage matches?
He never won.
To Backlund, to Morocco, all that shit.
He would always do a cool move.
Yeah, but he lost.
Paul should have said this. He's the master of using the cage as a weapon.
Exactly.
Instead of the master of cage matches.
No, because he lost all of them.
We got to find someone who never loses cage matches. That's the master
Hulk
of cage
Hogan.
Matches. Triple H or something.
No, he lost SummerSlam 97. Hulk Hogan never loses cage matches.
That's true.
If Paul Orndorff was bald.
Yes, he would have.
He would have.
Yes, it's true.
So Snuka has weird boots on, Quinn. You said they look like Rick Rude's boots.
Yeah, he's got these weird, like, colorful boots. I don't know if it's Rick Rude per se, but I feel like I've seen him on somebody else. Like, he didn't have the money for boots because he doesn't usually wear them, and somebody else gave them to him.
Possible.
Yeah.
Irish whip by Snuka snaps the top rope a bit. Quinn is aghast at how shitty Snuka looks, like we mentioned.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
It's just very unfortunate. I agree. Chops by Superfly. Paul says his manager's license right now is under review.
This is a great explanation.
Yeah, love this. Because apparently now that Eastern Championship Wrestling is part of the NWA, all contracts had to be under review and manager's license, so he is not at ringside with Snuka.
This is great because he's giving an actual rational explanation to probably the fact that he's just there to teach Joey how to do this.
And you know, with all this license talk, who would be very proud?
Gorilla Monsoon.
He loved to talk about licenses. Yeah, Gorilla. Slapping by Snuka, punching by Funk, punching by Snuka, and then a big pile driver, finally a move by Snuka, and he heads up top, but Funk grabs him and heads up himself, and they have a big exchange, and now, with this back and forth on top of the cage, Joey is making this sound way better than it actually is.
Oh my, the two exchanging punches now on top of the cage. It's hand to hand and a headbutt by Terry Funk. Can you believe Funk using the headbutt after just being piledrived?
He's doing a good job, though, because you feel like you're in a big match here, because it's like back and forth, and he's like, what a grueling contest. Like,
it's not that good, but Joey's selling it like it's really good. It's
I feel
okay.
Like everyone involved here, Paul, Joey, the fans,
the
Funk, Snuka,
yeah, Jim Molyneux,
everyone is like team playering, like making this so much better than it has any right being, and you feel like you watched like a pretty decent match at the end, even though like on paper and like just by if we reviewed it move by it sucks.
You know what?
But, like, it just comes out as a good product.
What you just said is a microcosm of the way ECW as a whole operated in 2001.
Exactly.
Everyone pulled together to make it seem better than it was.
Right.
And that's really true.
Like, as much as, Joe, you didn't like this match.
No.
But did you at least at the end of it feel like you saw something that mattered?
Yes.
Like, exactly. That's,
I agree.
Yeah.
I will agree with you there.
Yeah.
It was a piece of shit in the ring. It wasn't really actually good. But the combined efforts of the announcers, the ref, the crowd, the atmosphere, the wrestlers, forget the moves because they sucked.
Yeah.
But the drama, it all added up into a situation where the sum was better than its parts.
Exactly.
And that's ECW for you.
And that's a compliment, I
absolutely
think.
Yeah, like, no, I agree. I mean that positively.
And no, I'm not trying to, you know, say Snuka sucks or Funk sucks. They just were too old to be putting on this kind of thing, but everyone just made it look like they were great.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And in the midst of all this, Joey brings up the fabled Yukon Eric versus Killer Kowalski match.
What is he, JBL?
Back in 1969. Yeah.
Like reading Wikipedia.
Stomps by Snuka, punches by Funk. This looks like the Legends match you'd see today. Like, it really does, the way they're wrestling.
Right.
It's just punches, stomps. It's nothing major, but you were right about the way they sold the drama.
Yeah.
I'll agree with you there. Mm-hmm. Pile driver by Funk, a crappy one, but hey, why not?
Yeah.
Funk then with 14 headbutts, which doesn't work because it's Snuka.
That's a nice little touch, by the way.
It is.
Like that. And Funk at the end of the headbutts, he's the one that's dizzy.
Yep.
That's perfect. That's how that should be played.
Very nicely done. Superfly then headbutts him back and gets a body slam, misses a second rope headbutt, and Funk does a crawling headbutt as we go to break. Bunch of headbutts, huh?
Yeah, I guess he thinks if I headbutt him enough.
Yeah.
Like, I like that,
he's
actually.
He's trying
that's
to
like
penetrate
good,
it, finally.
Like, yeah, he's like, I'll sacrifice my body to, like, get through to him.
Very, very nicely said. We come back, and they're up on the cage. Funk is hanging upside down, and Paul, of course, because we couldn't escape this episode without one.
Yeah.
Does a Terry Funk impression.
Of course he does.
I really don't think he's going to notice.
Who is he? JR?
Yep, basically.
You're an egg-sucking dog.
Yeah, he doesn't say egg-sucking dog, but he might as well have.
Remember when JR's podcast just turned into him doing that for like 20 minutes?
But I love the bacon, egg, and cheese croissant-wich.
What do you mean, when? It still is that.
Remember how I don't listen to JR's podcast anymore?
Yeah. Well, it's not too bad not to crap. I don't want to crap on JR because it's actually, he gets good interviews. However,
well, it's easy when you're JR.
He should just skip the whole opening part.
Really? Yeah, I know. Yeah. Enough with this Terry Funk egg-sucking dog.
I'd rather hear about Austin's like dogs and his like trucks and his cars and everything than hear JR do impressions.
They can only get away with that kind of preamble because they have names and they're on podcast one. We can't do that. Yeah. Just spending 20 minutes just bullshitting.
We should ask the fans, do you want to have an extra 20 minutes of this show where me and Joe just talk about nothing?
Hey, maybe they do. We don't know. Anyway, swinging neck breaker by Snuka, and then a backbreaker, another commercial break, more punches by Snuka, more punches by Funk. Funk finally heads up as we notice a camera on a stick.
This is a great thing because I don't remember seeing something like that other than maybe the ref cam in WCW, like
the helmet cam,
the helmet cam, which was an interesting idea, but they should have just put it on a stick. It's like ECW figured it out before anyone else.
It's almost like a GoPro.
Yeah, they essentially put a handheld on a stick in a cage match where they couldn't get up to it, and you get to see these great shots of them, you know, punching each other up on the top. It's fantastic.
Really good shots. I'll give them credit there. And he just escapes and anticlimactically wins. It's a very weird ending.
It's basically they're punching too much, and basically both of them kind of pass out, Funk's on the right side of things.
Yep, and he falls off the cage onto the floor, gets a chair wrapped around his neck for fun.
And Funk say something in his little interview at the end about that. Like that, I like that dice touch, but we'll get to that.
We'll get to that. So Funk throws some chairs into the ring because he's a crazy old man.
And he's happy, I guess.
And he's happy. I guess that's a way to celebrate. Backstage, Joey Styles interviews the new ECW television champion Terry Funk with the international press looking on.
It's fantastic. There's clearly just like they just got anybody who worked there to just snap cameras.
Yes.
It's probably like disposable cameras with the flash on it.
Well, do you think Bill Apter's back there?
Probably him, but then like 45 workers for ECW, ring
Paul
boy.
Paul himself,
some ring boys, and like
Todd Gordon.
Okay, everyone, I bought these Fujifilm disposable cameras. Right. Just keep going.
Folks.
I guarantee you that's what's happening.
You're probably right. So he said he doesn't think he won or something. That was interesting.
Yes, and that's what I meant. Because he didn't really want it. It was basically they were punching each other at the end, and they both fell back, and he's like, you know, I shouldn't have won that.
It's really nice. He puts, you know, it's the calm Terry Funk interview.
Yeah.
He puts over Snuka. Mm-hmm. He puts over ECW a real lot.
Right.
And he puts over the ECW fans.
Right.
This was the guy they needed, Quinn.
Right. He was gung-ho for the product, and he talks about how he wants his historic career to end here.
Mm-hmm.
Like that this is the place he wants to spend the rest of his career. He wants to, there's so many good talents here, and he wants to help him out. Like, this is the kind of guy you need in any promotion.
Yeah. To help you out.
Yes.
As a
Terry
startup.
Funk is like a model for veteran wrestlers.
Absolutely. And he had no ego.
Yeah.
He put people over. He bled.
Right.
He hurt himself. He did everything he could. He sacrificed a real lot to put not only the other wrestlers over to make a living.
Yeah.
The company.
Yes.
He was huge to the ECW brand. And for that, I have nothing but respect for him on that.
He's a Hall of Famer.
Absolutely.
He's fantastic.
You ask the modern wrestling fan, and what I mean by that, folks, is someone who maybe was born in the late 80s, early 90s, what they know about Terry Funk, you're going to get memories of him in ECW.
Yeah,
that's how important he was.
Respectful memories. Like, not people like it was just some old man.
No.
Like, no, this was a guy that helped people and put people over and was a great... He still put on pretty decent matches. Every now and then, though, he would have good matches, too. Like, the triple threat match, or whatever they called it, triangle match.
Three-way dance, yes.
Yeah.
I know the one. In 97, right?
Yeah.
So, anyway, we close with a little bit of comedy here. We cut to a very Bobby Heenan-esque segment.
Yes. Paul
E. Dangerously, the manager.
In a competing locker room.
Yep. Knocking on Snuka's door with his members-only jacket on.
Yep.
Jimmy, let me in. And then, of course, Snuka slams the door in his face. He's all mad at him.
Let's try this again. This is Paulie Dangerously outside the locker room of Superfly. Hey, look, cut!
So Paul gets all upset, cuts the camera away.
Yep.
Then we go to Joey having a party, but it's such a comical party. Because first of all, Joey, like, looks all disheveled.
Right. So they clearly had Joey, like, rustle his clothes.
Yeah.
Like, this is the thing I love about ECW back then, that everything is so, like, it's like if me and you did it in our basement.
Right.
Like, it's great. It's fun. Like, and you could tell that everyone's having fun. You
could
tell that, like, they had some of the boys just yell stuff. And they're throwing, like, they had, like, the straw wrappers. Not even the straws. They're just, like, paper and stuff at them to make it look like there's more party than there is.
It's literally probably the same people that were snapping the cameras.
Right.
Now they're throwing straw wrappers and yelling.
It's kind of charming.
It's
like,
awesome.
It's nice. Like,
it's actually really awesome. Next week, by the way, Quinn, thankfully we're not reviewing that. We got Don Morocco, Abdullah the Butcher, and a whole host of others, folks.
Yeah, a lot of horrible people next week.
You know what, Quinn? As we've talked about this, right after we watched it, I was very sour on this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give Michael Quinn some credit. For those of you that underestimate my partner here and his powers of persuasion, Quinn made some very good points throughout this, and you have converted me. I appreciated this show.
Thank you. Well, I mean, they put a lot of work into it, and you could tell. That's the thing to me. It's like, it looks crappy. They don't have a lot to work with.
Yeah.
But you could tell there's just like heart put into it.
There is.
Like somebody wanted this to be a fun little 40 minutes of wrestling.
And that was Paul Heyman's vision. That was his baby. And this is the seeds of it.
Yeah.
This is an early glimpse at some of the great things that Paul Heyman would do with ECW.
Right.
The legend with Terry Funk.
Yeah.
The craziness of Sabu. The suplexes and that power style of Taz.
Yes.
The Public Enemy with their goofy ass style. Yeah. The Sandman.
Right.
There's a lot here.
I can't believe they fit all of this in. It's so short. Like, I swear to you, I said 40 minutes. It's really like 36 minutes and 17 seconds or some crap like that.
I wonder what was cut out. You think there was any music-related stuff cut
out?
Maybe
there was stuff cut out, but still.
Still, like, exactly.
Like, it seems like a jam-packed show.
Right. So overall, as a standalone with no context of before or after, it's not like the most entertaining watch, obviously. But knowing the context,
right,
knowing the narrative here that ECW followed through until 2001, it's actually a pretty interesting watch. It's not great.
Yeah.
But it was good.
Yeah, it's fine. And because of the WWE Network now, you know, we have the network.
Yep.
You can watch, like, this, all of it in order from, like, episode one to the end. And honestly, this is a really good starting point, I would say, for, like, the Paul E. era.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, this particular episode, though, because it's, like, Terry Funk makes a name for himself. In ECW, at least.
Sabu is there.
Sabu debuts.
Taz is there.
And the Taz. So that feud gets started.
Uh-huh.
The Public Enemy kind of like showing, you know, themselves off, kind of, you know, that they're a force to be reckoned with. You aren't missing anything if you start here.
That's a very good point.
Yeah.
You're really, really not. It only gets better from here. And it only would for 5-6 years.
Yeah.
You know, it'll only get better. But Quinn, overall, good watch. Good way to kick off the season. And thank you to Filippo Festuccia for the suggestion. As always, folks, remember to put your suggestions on the old suggestion box on OVPpodcast.com. Of course, you can reach us at our Facebook group. Join it if you haven't yet. Follow us on Twitter at OVPpodcast. And don't forget to recommend a friend.
Yes, please recommend a friend. Get them to leave those recommendations, and then the most recommendations wins.
You win. You win a shirt, and you get to be on the show with us.
I know. Great, fabulous prizes. Maybe Vanna White will come over.
She might be. We're trying. Yeah. We're trying. So, folks, until then, have a great rest of your day. Have a great rest of your week. Thank you so much for joining us for Season 6. We will see you next week on Monday, October 9th, for our Columbus Day show, I suppose we'll call it,
very special Columbus Day show.
Until then, folks, have a great day. We will see you next week.
See ya.
This is the Rockin' Rebel.
Who cares?
The man that ended Salvatore Belomo's career.
Wow.
And I hear all these people out here are sending him get well cards that hope he gets better.
What a goof! What a goof!
They're calling the hotline.
Who cares?
Hoping that Sal Belomo will return to the ring. Well, I hope he gets better too, because you know why? I'm going to finish him off for good.
Will you stop?